Wondering how to navigate local, city, state, or the federal government in order to grow your business, secure funding for your nonprofit, or advance your organization's agenda? Welcome to Lobbying Insider, a podcast that brings listeners to the intersection of business and government to provide a rare perspective on how things actually get done. We will dive into some pressing current issues, provide keen observations from the past, and keep an ever-watchful eye on what's coming next. I'm your host, Zach Fink, Director of External Affairs at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron. Glad to have you with us. And welcome back to the Lobbying Insider podcast. I am joined today by Sean Crowley and Bianca Rajprasad. Good to have both of you with us from DHC. Hello.
Hello.
Hello to you all.
The three of us and some other members here at the firm have just returned from the SOMOS conference in Puerto Rico, San Juan. This is a conference that's held every year kind of right after the election, primarily the Democrats and state and city government, but it's also kind of the lobbyists, the communication specialists, those kind of tied to state and city government. And normally it's a very, happy kind of conference, people getting together, seeing each other, kind of regrouping after the election. This year, of course, was a little different. They are majority Democrats. The election did not exactly go the Democrats' way, at least on the national level. New York was able to pick up a handful of congressional seats, but I don't know that that satiated this particular crowd. But let me just get general impressions from both of you. I mean, I know that in years past, you've had some very happy SOMOS conferences. You've also had some sort of more dour ones. I was somewhat surprised that I was expecting a more funereal kind of atmosphere, but I found people were pretty up and excited and affirmative and looking ahead. What was your sense, Bianca?
I feel the same way, too. I think a lot, we accept the results that happened with the presidential election. And, I think the mindset at SOMOS was focus on next year. When it comes to city council races, you had a lot of city council candidates who were at the conference networking. Obviously, the New York City Council speakers race is a huge talking point right now.
2025, a big year for the council, right? A lot of seats are up. There's going to be a new speaker.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that was kind of the primary focus this year. I don't know, Sean, maybe.
No, I definitely expected it to be, a real downer in that sense, coming off the big losses that, facing the nation at the time. Obviously, as you noted, New York, not so much. We gained some seats. But at the end of the day, when I walked off that airplane, I was walking off with a friend's wife who's from Puerto Rico, and she goes, uh-oh. I go, what's that? She goes, it says 55 to 65% chance of rain for the week.
It's the other thing, right?
Yeah, and in Puerto Rico, that means it's going to rain all the time.
Yeah.
So I was kind of trying to be the optimist in that regard. But that certainly reflected somewhat the sentiment. But as you said, people had a certain resilience. They were there was a positive. There was certainly a look going forward and not so much backward. I guess it's always good to, be in the company of friends and you haven't seen and so forth and so on. But I thought things did kind of brighten up, at least inside, because it never really brightened up outside. I know at the weekend it did, but otherwise it was mostly people's attitudes keeping the place on a positive note.
Yeah, that's right. I know that in years past we've had like a ton of rain, but this year was particularly bad. There was kind of like a storm system parked over the island that kind of didn't really move. I was actually able to get into the sun a little bit on Saturday afternoon, but it was a somewhat narrow window. I mean, I think it's also one of those things where, people who go to Albany regularly find themselves kind of up in Albany together, but certainly people from the city end of it are not often away together. So when everyone gets together in one spot, you are genuinely excited to see people you may tangentially know, peripherally know, even know, but never see together with everybody else. So I feel like there's a level of excitement that can't really be tamped down in that sense.
Right. And I think to your point, too, like there's a number of people who we see each other on city and state articles, top, 100 lists, but to see each other in person at this one conference and like kind of have informal conversations on issues, I feel like are so productive. And I get to, expand my network. I was able to network with a number of people in City Hall who came in under Maria Torres Springer's new administration as first deputy mayor. So like those networking, like, connections are invaluable at SOMOS. And again, meeting them informally on a beach and then coming back to the city and negotiating like big ticket items is really helpful.
Yeah, there's no pretense. It's just access. Everybody's kind of happy to be there. The drinks are flowing. Normally there's sunshine except for this particular year. But, people are happy to see each other. I mean, I always say to myself, like I try going in, like you have a list of conversations you have to have for clients or for business or for whatever else. And if you get to 90% of them, you've had a pretty successful run. Would you say that that was the case for you?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, yeah. The fact of the matter, I had a client of mine say, you know, why do you do this? So you really get anything out of it? I says, well, you know, let's go for a walk, quite frankly, around the El San Juan bar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She had never been there. I said, you know, check this out. Feel this vibe here. Look at that person over there. We bumped into a state senator who's been, you know, we've been working closely with. So you're not talking about so much the issues, but you're able to say, hey, thank you, and well, mm-hmm. looking forward to working with you in the new session going forward. So I said to her, after we bounced around for a bit and we spoke with a few people, I says, what do you think now? She goes, I see your point. And yeah. I see that this is fun and games, no doubt, but it's relationship building. That's key.
100%. And the El San Juan, by the way, is the bar. It's actually, they used to hold the conference at the El San Juan. There's a big kind of lobby area where people hang out at night. The conference was kind of across town at a different hotel, the El Carib. But a lot of people still gravitate back toward the El San Juan at night. So you wind up seeing a lot of people that you may have missed during the day. It's also so big, you sometimes get the sense that, like, there are people who you'd love to run into or whatever, but your orbits just don't cross for whatever reason. There's so many events, right? Because you not only have nighttime cocktail parties and receptions, but during the day you have these kind of breakout sessions and workshops. And we did a pretty successful one also, if you want to talk about that.
Yes, we hosted our MWBE forum at Somos, and basically it was connecting the private sector with government. We had everyone from Michael Gardner, who serves as a citywide chief diversity officer, from Lorraine Grillo, who is the former SEA DDC commissioner. We also had representatives from the Mayor's Office of Contracts, from the New York Women's Chamber of Commerce, and Lou Coletti, one and only, from DHC, who's an expertise
sweet
in...
Lou.
Right, Sweet Lou, love Lou, who's an expert in construction law and anything infrastructure related. And that was very successful. Like, you know, a lot of these workshops, they utilize these small rooms in the hotels, and we had an overflow at our room. And
yes, it was so successful, Sean couldn't get into the room.
Yeah, Sean, he had to listen from the outside.
I did.
We'll handle that later.
Didn't you hear my applause from the outside? Yeah. Myself and two other colleagues and another client couldn't get in.
For the record, Sean didn't want to be in the room because it was standing room only, and he didn't want to stand. However, Zach and I stood the whole time.
Well, you and I found a little spot over by the side. Right. We were kind of like, okay, well, we'll fit in here anyway we can, right?
Right, teamwork.
Yeah, well, it's amazing how you just talked about a terrific panel and a great subject matter, and here we are in this small room, and I bounced around, and I saw larger rooms with big, you know, TVs and this
down at
and
the
that.
Actual hotel. You
in
saw
the hotel,
this. Yeah,
like
yeah,
literally
yeah.
right down the yeah. way, and I'd be like, "How come?" And they had 15 people there with four people on a panel. I'm saying to myself, clearly, the interest is we should have got that room, right. like, you know, because we could have simulcast it at that point and had a bigger turnout in that sense. But no,
it was literally an overflow. People were trying to get in, and you know, I was hosted by Assemblymember Amanda Septimo of the Bronx, who really kept the program moving, which was really good. But, you know, a lot of what we heard, at least when they took questions from the audience, were people were like, listen, I have or I'm connected to a women or minority-owned business. What I'm having trouble sometimes getting is getting on that list of being available for state and city contracts. Like, how do you do that? It's one thing to get the designation. It's quite another to actually execute.
Yeah, and it's easy to get on certification lists for agencies. It's harder to get on projects. So I think the big, you know, talking point from a lot of the MBEs and WBEs is, you know, they could be certified from the state, city, within the agencies. However, they're not being called for projects because they don't have the network to connect with some of these prime contractors. And that was like the biggest thing is how is the city and the state working to kind of create a networking component where these MWBEs can now network with the big, you know, prime contractors like the Turners and, you know, and I think that's kind of where Michael Gardner jumped in and said, that's what we're working on, right? It's like, how do we now bridge the gap? And we're getting so many MWBE certified. We're also exceeding our MWBE goals on contracts, but we also need to make sure that the, you know, contractors we are certifying have a pathway to get on contracts and are working with our prime contractors. So I know something we spoke about afterwards with the panelists is maybe, you know, how do we utilize our network to create that network and maybe do something either next Somos or something in the city. So hopefully more to come on that.
And you had a little news to come out of that, which was that the city actually, for the first time, surpassed its goal of 30% in terms of designation. You know, I mean, it's pretty, over $6 billion worth of contracts. I mean,
it's great.
Pretty impressive, yeah. And, I mean, the state's been more on track on that, to be honest, but the city's catching up, and obviously mm-hmm. you want to meet those goals when you can. Were there any other kind of workshops that jumped out, anything else that was going on during the day? I mean, I felt like, you know, that one was the first one we went to. Then I know Friday's kind of a day of service. People are kind of at locations throughout the island, helping out where there is need. And then, of course, those receptions start pretty early in the day, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you have a full calendar. You could pick and go wherever you decide to go, whether it's a day of service, whether it's another workshop, or, you know, maybe do something on your own. But there's no question it's a full chock-a-block full of activity. It's up to you what you want to plug and play with. And I think that, I actually had to leave on Friday, so I missed that activity. So I was there the Wednesday and the Thursday. And, I just think that the buzz and the flow of the lobbies of the conference, bumping into various people, as, you know, you and I did last year, we went to the firefighters event.
That's right.
They had a bit of a luncheon there following our workshop. Then we kind of floated around. Then we went to the Tech NYC party.
Second year in a row that they had this party. It was in this time is in a kind of a boutique hotel. Remember last year you and I were in downtown,
right?
Old San Juan, right? And this year it was actually in this hotel, and yeah, pretty good attendance. They were a little packed, also.
They were packed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, there's a lot of interest there. Tech NYC obviously pretty influential in trying to advocate for the tech companies and everything else at both the city and the state level. So that was very well attended and impressive to see. And I guess Friday, Bianca, where did you end up? I know we saw you early at the actual event.
I kind of just floated in the lobby. That was really, because I just felt like that was like the prime location to grab people. And being in the lobby of the Carib Hilton, again, you're seeing people walk in and out of workshops, the luncheon that was going on, hosted by the UFOA. So that's really where I hung out. I didn't end up going to anything specific, but I do have a question for the both of you.
Sure.
Who ended up going to the Hood Caucus pool party?
I did not go this year. We did go last year, though, didn't we? Remember? we kind of walked through it.
We didn't really do a stop. We were not in our bathing suits.
Yeah, it was kind of a stop and chat.
Sponsored by MTV, right? I mean, it's a hoot. I know. I've been at it in years past.
TRL Live, yeah.
No one made it to the Hood Caucus.
No, we didn't make it. If I recall, it was actually raining.
I think it was, and then it cleared up because I saw a few people walking.
Just explain what this is, just so people know.
I'm sorry?
Explain what this is, so people, okay.
So the New York City Council has something called the Hood Caucus, and it's either the Hood Caucus or T-H-E, the Hood Caucus, depending on your preference.
It's the Bronx.
But it's basically a coalition of New York City Council members, and they're known to be like progressive, younger members, and they... I think it started last year. They started hosting this pool party, like networking with young professionals, both city council members, lobbyists, and people within the private sector. And it's always just like kind of like a cool time. You hang out by the pool. There's a good DJ, great food. So this year I didn't make it, but I was wondering if the guys did.
I never actually made it too. And there were certainly a lot of
next year. That's our spot.
Next year. we're gonna make without a doubt. And in terms of like just kind of the buzz and what people were talking about, I know there was some preliminary discussion. There were some members. I mean, granted, after an election, especially when there's a big loss like there was for the Democratic Party, you do expect some soul searching, some looking in the mirror. What did we do wrong? How can we tailor our message? There was some of that. There was also a little bit of, well, our message wasn't getting through and, you know, we should maybe go back up to Albany for a special session and enact further protections, perhaps for immigrants, et cetera. But, you know, I think that the leadership kind of struck that down relatively quickly. Like, I don't think the lawmakers will be returning to Albany before January.
I agree with that. And, you know, obviously the migrant crisis really sucked the air out of the room in terms of, you know, how people feel on the ground, right? And in New York State, given, you know, incoming Trump administration, you know, the mayor recently came out saying that they're willing to work with the administration. I guess a number of local leaders are a little nervous at that rhetoric. But we also have to look at the numbers and how New York mapped out. Yes, New York City went blue, But if you look at the map of New York in state in general, we went red, majority of counties. And, you know, if we're going to continue to push this rhetoric that didn't work before and keep moving forward with that, we're going to continue to see counties turn red. And there's obviously an issue with the Democratic Party in terms of our messaging and us actually like focusing on the issues that day-to-day people care about. You know, it's inflation, it's the migrant crisis, where's our funding going? And if we as a party like kind of stray away from that, we're going to continue to see seats flip, and we're going to see, and we lost a number of Democratic seats in the state legislature too.
Yeah. Without a doubt, got overshadowed by the other news, obviously, but it's significant. Yeah.
Right.
Long Island in particular.
Yeah. And Brooklyn, yeah, right? Iwin Chu's Senate seat went Republican. I think, you know, again, I understand people have their own priorities, but we really have to look at the bigger picture and realize that New Yorkers are fed up, and we have to figure out what we can do to make them feel like the Democratic Party actually cares about what they care about.
To appeal to them.
Right.
You know, I think something that really came out when I noted was, young leadership needs to be heard. And I think someone like Richie Torres's voice, you know, representing one of the poorest congressional districts in the country. And, you know, he said, you know what, the left has gone too far. We have got to really examine ourselves as a party.
Recalibrate.
We have to really recalibrate. I think, you know, his voice, I think, will be something that the party needs to listen more to. And we got to say, hey, you know, we know we have to win. To win, you got to talk to people in the middle. And if we're not listening to those folks and hearing what their concerns are and reaching out to them in a way that we're connecting with them, because let's face it, Trump, for whatever reason, he's connecting. Why isn't the Democratic message? Who speaks for working people? This president has done, no one's done more for labor than Joe Biden. Membership doesn't want to come along.
Right.
So what is that connection? Did Harris 90 days not enough to connect? She wasn't out there pressing the flesh. She's not the type of political animal that Bill Clinton was and Barack Obama was, right? That kind of thing I get. But we're missing something in the middle, and we need to pull that back.
And I think a lot of it does come down to economic issues. I do think there's a disassociation with some of the elites within the Democratic Party, with those who are having such struggles to make ends meet. And I think you very often find that, quite honestly, obviously there's tremendous urban poverty, but you see it a lot in rural counties, which are disconnected from some of the cities, and where a lot of the kind of, you know, heart and soul of the Democratic Party is located in some of those big cities. And maybe didn't realize that, you know, when you're struggling to make ends meet, when you're struggling to put food on the table, you don't have time to worry about social issues. You can't. It's survival, right? So you know, Democrats got very into social issues this past few years, and people kind of reject it. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to be lectured about stuff. You know, and I go back to where the Republicans were in the 1990s when they were, you know, very involved in restricting abortion and telling people what they can do in the bedroom. And the electorate largely, you know, responded by saying, we don't want to hear this, you know, and it almost seems like the roles are reversed this time around. What I was particularly struck by, I think it was the Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine tweeted a map of New York in terms of what went red and blue in which neighborhoods. Washington Heights had an awful lot of Trump red, and so did the Bronx. I mean, these
heavy Hispanic voters turnout in those areas.
Yeah. And these are not areas that you generally associate with turning Republican.
So that was a real national trend on the Latin vote, no doubt about it. They, you know, you hear the interviews, they're like, no, they're not connecting with me.
Right.
They don't get me. They're not speaking to issues that impact my family. Giving back what you said, food on the table, inflation, real issues.
Yeah.
President's done great things, you know, the pandemic and the post-pandemic world, you know, hurt pricing. But, you know, the person in the seat is going to get the blame for that. And it was a very difficult one to overcome.
It was three big issues, right? It was the border, it was the economy, and it was these social issues that tend to be divisive. And it's hard to put more stock in one or the other. It obviously depends on the individual voters. But I was under the impression that at least the border, that had calmed down a little bit, that things were heading in the right direction, that people were less angry about that. Certainly New York was directly impacted because, you know, red state southern governors were putting people coming over the border on buses and sending them here and making New York kind of responsible to feed, clothe, and house them. Mm-hmm. And I do think there was a lot of resentment about that, but I guess I was under the impression that was waning. And maybe that was still very palpable on people's minds.
I was going to say, I feel like the immigration issue and the border issue and the economy issue go hand in hand.
They do.
Right?
Yeah.
Like when people are going to the grocery store and they're paying $6, $7, $8 for eggs, and they're seeing on the news that you know, migrants who are coming into their state are getting, you know, gift cards or hotel stays, sure. and they're, you know, struggling to put food on the table, or they're struggling to be able to pay for their mortgage, or their property taxes increased this year. You know, like, stuff like that is what there's, that could cause somebody to become resentful, right? And I think, again, those issues went hand in hand, and even if there was a way to separate the two, it's kind of like, what are people feeling in their pockets? What are they feeling at home? And yeah.
And just driving to that feeling more, you know, you got to give it to the Trump campaign, because they touted and they continue to beat on fear, and they beg on, they pound on fear. They pound on, this is impacting you. You know, this is changing our country. And that really resonated. Whereas the Harris campaign, they beat on hope. And in this particular case, hope versus fear, you know, pounding those commercials out nationally, you know, between the two coasts, you know, if you see on some of the national broadcast, football broadcasts, you see commercials and you're just like, they're just playing to the fears of people. And unfortunately, you know, I believe that had a big say in what went on Tuesday.
Without question. And there is a sort of maybe inherent belief in the electorate that may be desperate, that the sort of fear approach will get things done, will get things solved. Whereas if you're putting your hat on hope, well, I've had hope all these years and nothing's happening for me, right? The inflation is still very stubborn. I'm still having trouble making ends meet. I mean, did Democrats kind of miss the boat here on all this messaging?
I think they hopped on, and I would think it ought to be a great position. J6, character matters, being honorable matters, listening to General Milley, listening to General Kelly. Well, if he hired the best, how come that character issue didn't win the day? It clearly did not. And you would have thought just that record alone would have been enough to disqualify Trump in this realm. But certainly that wasn't the case at all. People said, you know what, I may not like the things he says or the things he does, but I certainly don't like the direction that the country's going in. So I'm going to give him another shot.
I feel like if there were the President Biden administration has done great work for the country, but I feel like there were more local wins that people felt, you know, directly. I think that would have helped the scenario out too. Like if student loan relief was, you know, actually implemented and the courts didn't block it, right? Like if that was implemented, that would have been great. If there was a way that the administration could have put something out that incentivized first-time homeowners to get grant programs or, you know, kind of down payment assistance programs. I know that was something that Kamala Harris was talking about on the campaign trail. But if that was something that, like, Joe Biden was able to institute in the now and people saw that in the now, I think that kind of would have changed, you know, some people's hearts too. But again, like Trump campaign focused on the fear aspect, and that really ran and resonated apparently with voters.
And people, I do believe, right after January 6th, were traumatized by that and realized how fragile democracy is and how a threat could come and really take that away from them. But are we far enough removed from that at this point? I mean, I feel like in America, we sometimes go so quickly to the next crisis that it's almost like that it's hard to kind of conjure how frightened you were about that 4 years ago when you're frightened about, you know, not having enough money to make ends meet. I mean, maybe it just kind of puts something like that in the rearview mirror. It's like, okay, I'll worry about that when that comes back up around.
I guess that has to be it. There's no doubt about it. I mean, people, you live in the now, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, as much as we want to think that, you know, character is going to linger and decide the day, the fact of the matter is, as you say, if you can't pay your bills, if the rent's too high, mortgage rates are still too high, why can't I afford a house? Yet at the same time, we're giving people stuff. Well, where's my stuff, right?
Yeah.
What about me? You feel like you're being left behind. Let's focus on our citizens before we focus on anything else is kind of what I'm hearing from people.
Well, the legacy media, which really got this one wrong, right? It just seemed very out of touch. I mean, they've been banging the drum and screaming about the perils of a Trump presidency for quite some time. I mean, you certainly kind of chop it up and you realize that, like, you know, this is not something that people were really worried about, that the fears that we were reading and hearing about wound up being very different than the ones that were actualized and that people expressed in when voting.
Mm-hmm. It's the silent voters that came out, the ones who are not on social media, the ones who were not answering the polls that were showing Kamala Harris up. It was the silent voters that really pulled Trump over.
And Trump has always appealed to voters that can't necessarily be polled, people who may not even normally vote, right? I mean, and I think you saw that kind of on steroids this time around, that they really came out of the woodwork and they, you know, not only didn't show up on poll, but maybe haven't even voted before. Yeah. You know, it's a very hard thing to track, I think.
Well, I think the world of being a pollster is really subject to great questioning, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone saw the Iowa poll come out and said, "Oh my God, this
it was
huge."
An Iowa poll that came out right just before Election Day that somehow showed Harris up 3 or whatever it was in a state that Democrats never win, and the media kind of ate it up, and it turns out it was completely wrong. Like, right. Really, I mean, just totally off, right?
Right.
But everyone started saying, well, if she's up in Iowa, then she must be up in...
Oh, everything must be fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
Except when I talk to friends and relatives, I've gathered more Trump support over the last week than I had heard in a long time. And I was like, what? This one, that one? You? And that kind of thing? And, you know, that momentum... you know, should have been noted, and it wasn't.
For me, it was on election night, actually, watching the returns come in, and I noticed what was happening in Georgia, which was supposed to be a swing state. And, you know, Trump wound up winning Georgia by just a couple of percentage points when everything was said and done, but the margins he was winning by in rural counties, where there weren't that many votes, but by a percentage, it was significant. And I started to think to myself, okay, if this isn't close in Georgia, she ain't winning in North Carolina.
The Kornacki analysis of, you know, 2020 versus 2024 and how he was outperforming, et cetera, it was like it was an eye-opener. You could see that trend and getting the vibe that this wasn't going the Dems' way.
Yeah. And I guess just, you know, ally fears, of course, you know, obviously there are concerns about Trump and whether or not he believes in democracy. But in some ways, this is all very healthy, right? The party wins decisively. Party out of power figures out how to recalibrate and come back into power by tailoring its message, and then the cycle starts anew because the party in power always overreaches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll look to see what happens. Thank you both for being here. We really appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Talk soon.
Yep.
The Lobbying Insider is a production of Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron, LLP, New York's premier middle market law firm, practicing in over 20 areas, including commercial litigation, economic development, real estate, and of course, government relations. The Lobbying Insider is produced by Joe Benti, and our sound recording engineer is Devante Addison. Publicity by Jody Fisher PR, with Beth Ann Mayer at Lemon Seed Creative managing social media. Our podcast platform manager is Monica Thomas. I'm Zach Fink, host of the podcast, and if you'd like to help us spread the word about our show, please share it with colleagues and friends, and be sure to subscribe on your platform of choice. It can be found on Apple, Audible, Google, iHeart, Podbean, and Spotify platforms. Thanks for joining us.